Hello and welcome back to the Women's Soccer Podcast. I'm your host, Liam Greco, but you may know me better as LTG. It's been a while as I've been on vacation, which I still am, but I'm tuning back in to talk about Olympic soccer. It's been chaotic. Even though I've been away, I've been enjoying all the amazing matches that we've seen on the pitch, and this is being recorded right before the semifinals of the tournament, so we'll be talking about the group stage and quarterfinals, and then tomorrow an episode will come out about the semifinal matches. So without further ado, let's get right into it. This episode will be divided into two main segments. So first, we'll be talking about what went wrong for each of the teams that were eliminated at the group stage. And then we'll move on to the reviewing the quarterfinal matches and talking about each team's performance, not in that game, only in that game, but also as a whole tournament, as a more holistic approach. So first, I want to talk about the teams eliminated in the group stage. We'll start with the CAF side. Zambia and Nigeria were unfortunately both knocked out of the tournament. Obviously, with Zambia, there was this huge cloud over their head, with the ongoing reports of harassment from their head coach, which is obviously something that has a big impact on team morale, team performance, the safety of an environment. The fact that he still is enrolled in this position is disgusting to me. A convicted predator by various courts, it still is mind-boggling that he could be a presence in the locker room. And I think Zambia has these two star players that we all know and love from the NWSL. Barbara Banda was the clear positive of this tournament. She is one of the best forwards in the world, a Ballon d'Or nominee, in my opinion, for sure. Should have been nominated last time. I guess she didn't have the same platform that she now has with Orlando, as she's continued to score many goals, has clearly elevated the side from being a borderline playoff team to a championship contender, and then bringing that over to Zambia, she comes in as the star player, the focal point, and she's able to play more of a creative role off the ball, not just a goal-scoring role. Zambia's a mess besides Banda, and Kundinaji had added in there, who she hasn't really found great form with Bay FC yet, only scoring two goals, but she matched that tally in a much shorter period amount of time with Zambia at the Olympic team, getting on the end of set pieces that Banda delivered in that match against Australia. And overall, this tournament was just really, really crazy for Zambia. It was great to see the team have these bright points. However, the defensive performance was very poor. It was hard to watch at times how teams like Australia, US, and Germany all just seemed to cut through this back line seamlessly, and that will come with time. I think Zambia is clearly one of the weaker sides in the tournament. They have so much talent on their team, but the investment just unfortunately isn't there yet, but there's a lot of potential. I think the team lacks a lot of professional players, not in the way that they act, but just being a part of a professional organization at club level, which makes all the difference. Obviously, there's a few players in the NWSL alongside Banda and Kundinaji. There's Grace Chanda, who recently signed for Orlando Pride, but even there's a flurry of players playing in Europe, many of them play in the domestic Zambian League, which is not currently fully professional. So that obviously can continue to grow. It was a promising performance for Zambia, much better than the last Olympics, where they got kind of destroyed by many of their sides. And it really shows how when the investment is just slightly better, there can be so much talent found in many of these countries around the world that have previously not had that investment. And the world is catching up is a sentiment that we'll go into in this episode. But Zambia is a side that I think is so much promising talent. I can't wait to watch them continue to develop in the future. We'll now move on to Zambia's fellow CAF counterparts in this Olympic Games, and that's Nigeria. Nigeria is a much more established nation in the women's game. The Super Falcons have had a lot more experience at the top level than Zambia. With Zambia, this is only being their third major tournament in recent years. If you add the African Cup of Nations, then that would be fourth. But so Nigeria has a little bit more of a veteran presence that Zambia doesn't get. Even though Banda and Kundinaji are such amazing players, they're still in their young to mid-20s. And I think Nigeria has a lot of veteran experience that Zambia just doesn't have yet. But at the end of the day, Nigeria is kind of in a mix of that old generation and new generation. And we're kind of seeing that balance that is going to continue shift and lean more towards the younger side. When you look at the Nigeria team, they kind of had an unorganized aura to them. Their style of play was merely chaotic. It lacked the fun football, the vibrant football that we got to enjoy from them at the World Cup. And really, it just begged the question as to why this team couldn't have performed better. There was a lack of offensive firepower, the team only scoring a few goals over the course of the tournament. They obviously were in the group of death. It was always going to be a tough time for them playing against Spain, Japan, and Brazil, three of the best teams in the world. But they showed grit and determination, which I think can't be discounted, along with glimpses of technical brilliance. It wasn't all chaos. It was just parts where I felt like you just wish they could hold on. And that'll be found more in the future. Again, just these CAF nations haven't had as much of a chance to be at the top of the world. And now seeing them continually increase in performance level, obviously, and just in the last Olympics, just looking 4 years back with Zambia losing by a double-digit scoreline to Netherlands, it really shows you how far CAF has come. And I can't wait for the future. We should have seen probably more of Uchenna Kanu and Nicole Payne, in my opinion, but that was just me, I guess. They had a very good defensive performance. Obviously, the best game, in my opinion, was the one where they barely lost to Spain 1-0, and Alexia Putellas' free-kick goal was the ultimate decider. But at the end of the day, with players like Ndozia and Echegini, who showed that they will both be future stars of this Super Falcons team, but also in the world, we know that they have so much talent, and I cannot wait to see Nigeria continue to represent that to the world. Moving on to Oceania, the two World Cup hosts from 2023 really struggled this tournament. Australia lacked defensive stability, giving up many goals in their various matches. Obviously, the ending of the tournament was the best performance they had in my eyes. They gave up, though, 10 goals in three games, which is obviously something that you can't really get through if you play that poorly defensively. They did score a decent amount of goals. They got six in that match against Zambia, but elsewhere, it was slim pickings. They only got one in their other two results, and obviously, through 3 points, it can be enough to get you through, but it's not something you should rely on. And getting 3 points in a major tournament is quite bad. And the way that the Olympics works is some teams 3 points, yeah, they get through, some don't. But if Australia had had more defensive stability and hadn't given up all those goals, they might have had a good enough goal differential to go through. The midfield was very cohesive against Zambia. I'll give them that. The middle of the park was completely dominated and controlled by Australia, but they struggled against a higher level competition in regards to the midfield park. Kylie showed leadership, clearly the best player on the pitch for the Aussies, getting many goal contributions. And even though they may seem to have filled the shoes of Sam at the surface level, scoring 7 goals in 3 games, the fact that 6 of them came in one match and the other games they really didn't score any goals, and also the clinicality that Sam brings in the final third is unprecedented to any other striker in the world, let alone any other striker of Australia. And missing Sam Kerr was obviously a very big problem for this Aussie team. They really just didn't have that same oomph to them and a star quality that Sam brings, and there was no one who really could replace that. Caitlin Ford is a fine player, but it was too much to expect of her to drop more into that goal scoring role when she's more of a creator at heart. And so I think this Aussie team really shows that there's a lot of room to improve for the next generation if they want to stay at the same level, because Sam is honestly one of the leaders of this team, and without her, the side looks a little bit rough. But nevertheless, it was a decent performance in that last match against the US. They ended on a high. There's still a lot of talent on this team. Midfield was quite good, but up front, I just wish we could have seen a little bit more clinicality. Moving on to the last nation eliminated in the group stage is New Zealand. They obviously were the weakest team going into this tournament. I felt bad for them, to be frank, after they got spied on by Canada, and yet there was no direct punishment that was in favor of New Zealand, except for the point deduction for Canada. New Zealand, in my opinion, should have been given the 3 points that game, just because of how the situation called for both sides feeling the benefits of what occurred. I think when you look at New Zealand's team, they really were always going to be one of the underdogs, missing leaders like Hannah Wilkinson and Ali Riley, and Ali's injury was definitely not helpful. They lost one of their best players and veterans. It was always going to be a tough tournament for the New Zealand side. It was really, really too young of a team. There was no balance of youth and leadership, and the youth players didn't really have anyone they could lean on, and I think that was the biggest problem that we saw. Annalita had a really good tournament, was faced with a lot of shots, and she made a few errors, yes, that resulted in the goals, but at the end of the day, nice tournament all around. The New Zealand team, they're a decent side, but just didn't have the offensive firepower and really just the means to keep up with the very deep pool that is the Olympic Games. Moving on now to the knockout stage part of this episode, we're talking about the first quarterfinal, which is, in my opinion, the most fun game that we watched tactically. I think the way that Japan played was so interesting to watch for the U.S. because it really had the U.S. going up against something that we hadn't really seen before. They didn't really have to deal with the low block as much, and Japan playing in that 5-4-1 shape defensively really challenged the U.S. Japan is in the midst of a youth turnover, lots of young players that are playing in top clubs. Look at Fujino, who recently signed for Manchester City. But they don't have that international experience. Some of them do. Obviously, Fujino is one of them. But in general, I look at this Japan team, and I didn't see enough experience to outlast the U.S. They have a lot of younger players, yes, but the U.S. has these leaders in Horan and Nair who we can trust, whereas for them, it was really just Kumagai. So I think that was interesting. And they were in the group of death, so their knockout stage seeding was lower than expected. So this is a very bad draw for the U.S. in that regards because of how good we know Japan can be. And that was something I just thought about going into this match, was how Japan, their goal differential, it was very different than what it could have been if they were in a much easier group, like, for instance, France was. And so that's something I think was really important to think about leading up into this game. And then the U.S. got to the group stage with ease. They won all three of their matches, considering the friendlies before the tournament where I kind of beat the team up with kindness, I think, we need to be better attitude, but this is definitely not what I would have expected with the U.S. team. They had a little bit of a scare against the Aussies, but to beat a German team that has been so technically sound so routinely at a 4-1 victory was sublime. And they went into this game looking like the favorites, in my opinion, after how they've been playing. But Japan always can be the team that can break down the U.S. Historically, they've done that. And I think that's not something you can really discount. It's part of the program, and they know how to beat the U.S., and it was interesting to see them going up against it. I talked about this as a very interesting game to watch because the conflicting tactics in regards to the battles across the pitch. But let me just state the obvious first. This is a very, very boring game in regards to chances. There was, like, nada. Nothing. Except for that Robin goal, it was a really dry game. I think a lot of people discounted how Japan set up really, really nicely in that low block. That low block prevented the U.S. team from utilizing their pace and ability to get into the behind for the majority of the game. The Rodman goal was the one exception, as Jun played a beautiful ball that beat multiple lines, and Rodman was able to take it down beautifully and hit it across her body with the left foot into the top left corner. Great goal. But if we're looking over the course of the entire 121 minutes, the U.S. faced threats from Japan. The 5-4-1 setup from the Japanese side allowed them to expose the U.S. midfielders and fullbacks for getting caught far too up the pitch. The midfield of the U.S. was messy, sloppy. It lacked composure and organization, and it really begged questions as to why the trio chosen was selected. Sam Coffey went into this match with a suspension, so she wasn't able to be on the team, and obviously we know how much talent there is on this U.S. team. There's players able to slide in, and I do understand how Corbin Albert had a decent performance against Australia with that banger of a goal that she scored. I can't discount that, but I do think that bringing in someone like Sonnet in the six would have been more valuable. We saw how good Sonnet was in the round of 16 game last World Cup. Her ability to break lines of passes is better utilized is the wording I'm looking for in that sixth role. And I think Albert just really hasn't had enough time to adjust to the team. There's obviously been a lot of off-the-field controversies with her, but the performance she's had, she hasn't really felt like she's fully integrated yet. And so I feel like for a knockout stage game, it would have made more sense to put someone like Asana in the six and then look at the back line by putting in Kruger. That was just my opinion. A little bit confused about what that happened. It was nice to see Sonnet directing Albert, to see her take more of a veteran role in such a young team, and that leadership role is nice. But it was a little bit concerning because of the fact we know that this is an knockout stage game. Like, Albert should be able to adjust to this team, and she has had a very poor passing accuracy, and she lacks that, I guess, X factor that we saw in previous sixes of the U.S. team. And this is nothing to diss Albert. I think Coffey's a very, very good player, but she lacks it as well. Replacing Julia Ertz's shoes, it's a kind of impossible job. And I think this U.S. team is taking a new, different approach. And the six doesn't have to be as dynamic up the pitch as Julie. But it really begs the question as to why Albert was the preferred option, given the fact that the passing and possession, which I have loved as that approach, has been more highly integrated under Hayes. I think that Albert didn't really fit that, but she did a good performance. I'll give her credit where credit's due. I do struggle with some of the off-the-field battles, but nevertheless, good shift she put in. Overall, there were some issues, but she's looked better. I was skeptical of Hayes going back to the coaching side of things and tactically during the send-off games for those two reasons. But it's looked a lot better in the tournament. We've seen how that possession style has allowed the U.S. team to assert more dominance, but I hope it doesn't take away from the team being that offensive threat. I think that they've been a little bit too passive in the final third for my liking. We know how this U.S. team needs to take more shots. They need to get in the box more. And even though you've seen this game by the time it's coming out, they're playing a very, very tough German side tomorrow. And Germany's not going to allow them to have as many chances, I would think, as their previous match that they had. And so we know how dangerous Germany's in the counter, just like Japan. And so the U.S. team needs to be clinical of the times they're going up the pitch. They can't be too passive, because if they turn the ball away, I'd rather them miss a shot and have it go out of bounds and give it away and have way too many numbers out of position. So I don't think that this team has failed to improve from those friendly games. It's not the level that we'd hoped for. The passing has been a little sloppy. But Emma, again, this is one of her first games with the team. She had four games in the build-up to this tournament. Every other USA coach has had at least four times the amount of games to integrate the team together and bring their tactics onto the pitch. And Emma's done a good job at getting us to the semifinals with such a little amount of time. And I'm pretty confident the U.S. team can beat Germany tomorrow. I'm recording this on the day before the game, if you can't tell, that Monday. But overall, nice job from the U.S. to get an extra time win against Japan. I would like to see Emma put more trust in her bench and be less reluctant to make substitutions. We know that this Germany game is going to be in the fifth game in a very short stretch of time. I think it's 11 or 12 days. So these subs need to be made. I'd like to see maybe someone like Casey Krueger, who we've shouted out in this episode, slot into that back line. Maybe even Jaden Shaw if she's back. I wouldn't want to rush her, but overall, I love seeing Jaden getting the chance to move forward. We've seen how good she is for the team, and I just hope that the team can continue to grow and put a good performance on their next match against Germany, but nice job against Japan. Moving into one of the more crazy games of the weekend, it was Germany-Canada. Joan Gehe has been one of the craziest headlines of the tournament, and the six-point deduction did not just take a big toll on Canada's chances to advance out of the group, but the mental stability of the players. There was a recent interview of Gabby Carl, Vanessa Gilles, and Evelyn Viennes of the Canadian side talking about this, and Gilles shared some very emotional and heartfelt comments on how the players, you know, they really suffered more from this from anyone, and the abuse that they've received obviously is not okay. And even though what the coaching staff said was not okay from a sporting perspective, some things are bigger than sport. And I think what this movement has shown is that our society needs to be better at addressing these issues and understanding where the blame is. I think the six-point deduction was totally fair, to be honest. I think they probably should have gotten a nine-point deduction, been like a year out. But I do think that the Canadian team, I don't blame the players at all. I am a little bit salty about how they were still allowed to continue the tournament, considering that they've been cheating on their team. But nevertheless, that headline's been crazy. Thank you so much to the listeners who shouted that idea out as a talking point in the episode. We're going to do a Q&A episode in the future. I was going to save that one for this, but the fan who sent this in, thank you so much. You know who you are. I won't shout you out for privacy reasons, but thank you so much for sending questions and continue to DM me more. Going back to this game, Germany had an up and out group stage. They lost 4-1 to the U.S., like we talked about, but they put two other good performances against their other opponents, outscoring their team, the opposition 7-1. And this game felt inevitably like it was going to fall for Canada. They had chance after chance after chance, but they just failed to capitalize. Canada obviously has had experience in previous shootouts versus the U.S., which happened in the Gold Cup, so we knew what they were going into, and they had well-versed experience, obviously winning the gold medal in a shootout, but it's going to be very interesting. And the goalkeeper battle, and this was very fascinating to watch, between two of the best keepers in the world who have both played for Gotham in times of their career. Schoenberger are specializing in shot stopping, so it was always going to be hard for the shooters going in. That was I would hope that both Scott and Heath were aware of that. But once the final whistle was blown after 120 minutes, Canada must have felt very disappointed to have it go to a PK shootout, considering they kind of dominated the run of play on the pitch. And that's how soccer works. When you get to a PK shootout, anything can happen, and that happened for Germany. Besides Lohmann's kick, Germany was very clinical. They used a calm, cool, and collective energy, which Canada lacked. The penalties from Canada were not the best at all, especially Ashley Lawrence's and Adriana Leone's, but even the kicks that were converted lacked the quality you'd expect from the reigning gold medalist. And Katrin Berger has been so great for golf. I mean, the fact that she could perform so well in net on the PKs, but also finish one herself, was amazing. And Canada on the pitch played a really good tournament, considering all the headlines this federation's making for all the wrong reasons. And for Germany, going into tomorrow's match, they're going to have to deal with the fact that that midfield is a little bit disorganized without Lena Oberdov. And so I hope that the German team, from their perspective at least, can find a way to get that energy back, and hopefully for them, get a goal in the 120 minutes. Because they failed to do so against Canada. Good performance overall from both teams, but would like to see a little bit more from Germany in the next match against the US. Next, I want to move on to the France versus Brazil match. In the group stage, France was technically sound. They did such a good job finishing in front of goal, but the defensive performance, that could have improved. Brazil was in the same group as Japan, which I alluded to earlier in this episode as the group of death. They had a nice performance to get through, but they were faced with a very tough draw on paper against the hosts, who are a relatively formidable nation that many would have assumed could have competed for the title. In episode 674, which you should listen to, by the way, I talked about the roster selections of four of the nations at this tournament, and I talked mainly about, for the Brazil side, the narrative about how this younger roster left behind players like Dibinha and brought some, you know, new talents that have only had a few caps to the national side, and that was something I viewed as a negative previously. But we know how Marta, the legend of this Brazilian program, is competing in her last major international competition, and she is getting to witness of the aftermath, the result of her previous plea for the younger generations to step up. One of the positive sides of this younger influx in the roster, who have done a very, very good job of the tournament, getting the team to the semifinal stage. France drew a PK early in this game, and it was a really poor shot from Sakina. It was right into the keeper's grasp. It was an easy shot stop for them, and France lacked that confidence and connected energy across the different lines of the pitch, which cost them the match. Brazil, however, was great in the counterattack, and Gabby finished a very good ball over the top as she beat it past the onrushing keeper. Overall, Brazil's had a very good tournament so far. I could expect them to medal in this competition. Really such a fun team to watch. But France has really not been able to break the deadlock of their very poor performances at major tournaments. And unfortunately for them, this is just another tournament they could add to the list where they failed to convert at a major tournament. Last but definitely not least was the reigning World Cup champion, Spain, taking on one of the breakout teams of the World Cup in Colombia. Spain were the team to beat going into this tournament, even with all the different stuff off the field and the fact that they were in the group of death. They got a lot of points in that group stage. They won all three of their matches, and they went into this match with loads of confidence. There's been a lot of narrative off the field with the various fights they've had with their federation and their coaching staff, but it did feel like this is going to be an easy-ish game for them, with all due respect to Colombia, who have also been playing with a lot of attacking freedom, and they've looked relatively defensively sound, considering the fact that they're without their star keeper, Catalina Perez, who tore ACL in club play, which is something to mention. However, even though I wouldn't have predicted this, Colombia got off to a very, very hot start, getting two goals in the first 60 minutes of the match. It looked like Colombia was going to have a convincing victory that would be an upset that would last in Colombian women's football history forever. However, they perhaps got a little bit too comfortable in their lead, subbing out all their star attackers in Linda Caicedo, Lacy Santos, etc. Spain equalized, scoring two goals, with the latter being scored in the 7th minute of injury time, and without their attacking threats, Colombia failed to add another tally to the score sheet, and even though they held Spain scoreless in stoppage time, Spain's clash showed in the penalty shootout, ultimately defeating Colombia. We continue to see more shootouts as these tournaments continue to progress. It begs the question as to how these shootouts correlate, or the winners of these shootouts, to the federations that are more heavily funded. When you look at these teams, for instance, I'll shout out the Nigeria team, who is the better side for the majority of the game, and they were playing a much more heavily funded federation or side in the Lionesses, and even though they were the better team over the course of the game, they lost in the shootout with some shooters. Like, I don't want to shout her out negatively because she's been such a good player for them, but Michelle Alozia shot it over the bar. There's been a lot of that, and the same thing happened in this game against Colombia of multiple players shooting the ball over the bar, and it begs the question as to the disparity in prep for these shootouts. And obviously, I'm not a behind-the-scenes expert or in the camps of any of these clubs, but I do wonder as why these teams don't have the technical ability in these shootouts that they seem to have so easily on the pitch. Is it because these shootouts are happening later in the game that there's a lot more subs put into it? I guess it's just a blurt of thought or a strain of thought that came to my head as I was recording this, but it wasn't even on the planning sheet. And I was just thinking about, there's been so many different instances of the same exact fact, and it begs the question as to whether these federations should be looking more into that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I know it's a little bit later. I've been on vacation, and I obviously the main topic of the day that this is released will be the USA episode. And don't worry, that's going to be coming out tomorrow on the Wednesday. So I hope you'll tune into that as well. Please follow us on Instagram at the Women's Soccer Podcast, with underscores in between each word. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a 5-star review and also comment on our episodes on Spotify. That's a new feature. So if you're listening there, please give us a comment. Any positive feedback or even negative feedback stuff you want us to work on will really be appreciated. Thanks again for tuning in, and peace out from your host, LTG. See you next time. Bye.